Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and as I said before the break, Daily News owner Mort Zuckerman, Mets owner Fred Wilpon, and Senator Frank Lautenberg are just three of the well-known people apparently affected by the alleged biggest Ponzi scheme in history, allegedly perpetrated by Bernard Madoff, who is not just some guy in a corner. He's someone who was the chairman of the NASDAQ, considered a pillar of the Jewish community here and in Palm Beach, Florida. And I guess it's bad enough that real investment firms are going under. Now we have two major scams in the news here in New York, apparently involving fake investment firms, this one and something involving litigator Mark Dreyer, another well-known, very successful person in his field of litigation law, who apparently had to, at least allegedly, had to try to make money ripping off hedge funds. So let's talk about these things and try to figure out what is actually going on and if anything ties them together and the psychology of this. How do such sophisticated investors and politicians and business people believe in these unbelievable returns? Aaron Lucchetti is a Wall Street Journal staff reporter and looking into the Madoff case. Hi, Aaron. Welcome back to WNYC. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
Great name, by the way, Madoff.
Yeah, it's been the subject of a lot of blog commentary in recent days.
It keeps happening. You know, the chairman of General Motors has been in the news, Wagoner, and of course he's a Wagoner, and of course this guy made off. But what exactly did he do?
Well, he is alleged to have perpetrated a Ponzi scheme that is estimated at about $50 billion, and the first reaction to that number was shock. I don't think anyone in the business realized how much money that Bernard Madoff was running. But when you look at some of the names and banks and institutions that are on his list of investors, it adds up pretty quickly.
Who else besides those I mentioned?
Well, yesterday we reported that a number of European banks had money with Madoff, including or had money on behalf of clients with Madoff, including Grupo Santander in Spain, BNP Paribas in France, and UBS in Switzerland. Nomura Holdings of Japan was also an investor or had clients, a limited amount of client money in the Madoff funds.
What, by the way, is a Ponzi scheme exactly? It's a phrase that's commonly used, but I'll bet not many people could define it.
Well, at its essence, it means simply that someone is running money or has taken money from people with some promise or with a promise that they would get that money back with some return. A Ponzi scheme happens when the person running the money, the investor, doesn't give you your money back, but instead takes new money from a third person and gives that money back to you. So your money is technically gone, or the money that you've taken in from the new investor is technically gone. And for a Ponzi scheme to work, you need to get more and more new investors. So it really relies on a sophisticated, successful marketing operation. And if you have that, it can go on for years or decades.
How did he get that to go on for years and decades, piling up to allegedly $50 billion without anybody noticing?
Well, Bernie Madoff had an impeccable reputation in the securities industry for many years. There were some red flags, some concerns about the way he ran money, but that was a side light, a sideshow for his main business, or at least it was perceived that way, in the 80s, 90s, and the first part of this decade. His main business was trading stocks. He was a former chairman of the NASDAQ. He was a pioneer in trading stocks off of the New York Stock Exchange, which in the 70s and 80s was a very revolutionary concept, but now is quite taken as a normal course of business. The stock market business is more fragmented. NASDAQ and other electronic players have a big piece of that business. And Bernie Madoff was there in the early days of the growth of that business. And his firm, Madoff Securities, had always been associated with him. He had his younger brother working there, Peter Madoff. Eventually, he'd have his sons working there. And it was very much a family business that he founded and sort of was the brain the brains behind that operation, or at least the early days of that operation.
I gather his sons wound up turning him in.
Well, according to the complaint that came out last Thursday, Mr. Madoff, Bernie Madoff, told his two sons and a third employee about what had happened and said it was a big lie, that the money was gone, and that basically the gig was up.
Where did the money go?
Well, that is a very big question in a Ponzi scheme. Where did the money go and how much of it can be returned or recovered for investors? One very interesting aspect of this is that, you know, some people in the Madoff empire who had been investors with him had pulled their money out for various reasons in the last 6 months or in the last 2 years. Madoff allegedly was very difficult to deal with if you had questions about what was going on in the fund. And so people, for various reasons, took their money out. Now, the question is, if you took your money out last month or perhaps late last year, is there any way that the regulators will take that money back from you so that it could be split up among all the investors, including the ones who kept their money in and now are looking at losses of 100% on, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in many cases?
Might that happen? Might money that was withdrawn from the fund and then maybe spent on things, who knows, actually be seized by the government?
Well, there is some legal precedent for it in a case called Bayou, which was another hedge fund. But it's a difficult road. I mean, it's obviously much harder for the government to get that money once you've taken it out. There's a concept called fraudulent conveyance. So if someone goes and robs a bank and then gives, you know, $5,000 to his next-door neighbor as a gift, you're not allowed to keep that money. It's a similar concept here, but the question is, where do you draw the line? What if you took the money out, you know, 5 years ago or 10 years ago? You haven't done anything wrong, and you've probably moved on with that money and invested it elsewhere or bought things that aren't liquid or easy to trade. So it is a tricky concept, and I think lawyers and investigators will be looking at that as one way to try to compensate investors a little bit who've had such immense losses.
Aaron Lucchetti from the Wall Street Journal, my guest on WNYC, talking about the alleged biggest Ponzi scheme in history, perpetrated allegedly by Bernard Madoff, former chairman of the NASDAQ. I mentioned his sons, and I gather there's some uncertainty about whether they really turned him in or if there was some kind of setup to spare them from criminal liability?
Well, there's a lot of speculation about that. There's nothing been proven yet, but investigators are looking at the question of who else may have helped Bernie Madoff in his hedge fund operation, his money management operation. We're told that he had about 20 employees there, and there were about 200 employees in the other part of the business, the trading part of the business. That part of the business, which grew up with Bernie Madoff in the 70s and 80s when he was running NASDAQ and very involved with the stock markets of this country. That is a big unknown at this point. The money management operation was on a different floor. People who visited the trading operation and Bernie's two sons, Andrew and Mark Madoff, were often told that it was basically a separate business and it wasn't something that should concern them as trading clients of Madoff Securities. But now really all bets are off. I think investigators are asking every question and turning over every stone, because once, you know, a $50 billion pool of money vanishes overnight, you start asking other questions about what might not have been as it seemed at this company.
Somebody on our website writes, 2 weeks ago, I picked up a John Grisham novel while on vacation, The Partner. Halfway through the book, the Dreyer and then Madoff stories began to unfold. I literally could no longer justify reading Grisham, no offense to him, and of course the scam victims, but you can't make this stuff up. John Grisham. And somebody else writes, in Saturday's Times coverage, one investment firm was said to lose all of its clients' funds because they were 100% invested with Bernard Madoff. Can someone please explain precisely what companies like this one do to earn their fees if they've really invested all their money with this one guy? Was that happening?
It's a very good question. There are fund of funds, which are these operations that have sprung up at a very interesting time in the history of Wall Street. I mean, we had a bear market in 2001 and 2002, but a lot of people didn't really feel the losses of that. If you weren't in dot-com stocks or the internet or heavily invested in stocks, you were able to weather the storm from that. And we had 5 or 6 years of very bullish markets since then, especially in the business of lending money. And, you know, I think 2008 will be remembered as a year where sentiment turned, where confidence, which had been building for so long, has been shattered. And a really good example of that is what happened with Bernie Madoff and the fund of funds. These investors basically believe that Madoff had great returns and that he was very difficult or exclusive, so it was difficult to get into his fund.
And how come there was no due diligence on the part of the large banks? You could understand the small investor who maybe doesn't read every word of every prospectus and takes things for granted as long as they're not asking for their money back in cash.
Right.
What about these large banks who you would think part of their business is to do the due diligence?
Right. Well, Madoff released a lot of information. What's unclear is whether it was correct or whether it was the right information to ask for. He supplied a lot of trading data on when he bought and when he sold various things, but he didn't do as much in terms of overall portfolio information. And if you asked about his strategy, he wouldn't be forthcoming in a lot of cases.
And yet there was one hint that was reported, I think, in a New York Post article over the weekend, that somebody wondered aloud whether Madoff wasn't running a big Ponzi scheme in 1999.
Yeah, I that is a very good point. I mean, we had some of that in our stories as well about the red flags that came up. Someone had written into regulators and said this was a Ponzi scheme. The Journal actually had a story in 1992 that raised the question of how Madoff made his returns. It seemed very predictable. No matter what the market did, if it was up, if it was down, Madoff was able to make 10 or 15% a year.
Which brings me to the psychology of it. Again, you would think that these sophisticated investors and other kinds of sophisticated people in our society, whether Mort Zuckerman, who's a developer in addition to owning the Daily News and doing some other things, Fred Wilpon, who owns the Mets, Senator Frank Lautenberg, you would think these people at this level of sophistication would see that they're getting 10-15% a year if the market is up, if the market is down, and scratch their heads and ask a question. Instead, they believed in the unbelievable.
You know, you're right. I mean, we got a very good email recently from someone who basically said that investing in someone because of their reputation is sort of the antithesis of good due diligence and research. I mean, Bernie Madoff had a great reputation as someone who'd been in the business a long time and who had a relatively clean record and had accomplished a lot in the business. And over the years, he had a steady investment track record that he told investors about that people didn't ask enough questions on. And it really brings up a broader question about hedge funds and how those returns are generated. I think we've been in a period for a long time where hedge funds have boomed and people took a lot of what they did at face value. They didn't ask a lot of questions. They just took the returns and they assumed that there are a lot of smart people in it. There are smart auditors. There are smart intermediaries that screen and vet these hedge funds. How could they be doing anything wrong? And now I think up and down that chain, people will start asking a lot more questions.
So this is part of the failure of regulation.
It's very intertwined with that. I mean, you've heard about all these black box funds that do things that no one understands. It's beyond most people's comprehension to understand the mathematical models and the market correlations that go into a large, sophisticated hedge fund's operations. But now, this is the risk of that, because for every really smart and beyond our comprehension ability from a hedge fund manager, you're going to have someone who you think has that, but in the at the end of the day is really doesn't.
So last question, and we're going to have to save the Dreyer case for another day. I know it's a crazy question, but why did he do it? Wasn't this guy making enough money without running a $50 billion Ponzi scheme?
It's a very good question, and we've been thinking a lot about that, and I think we'll be trying to uncover what motivated Bernie Madoff for as long as it takes to get a sense.
Wasn't he already a multi-millionaire just from his legitimate business?
He was, but the connections and the plaudits and the new money, I think becomes in a lot of ways very hard to turn down. Even though he was exclusive, and he turned away money at times. It's very difficult when you're building an empire, I suppose, to turn it all away. And the question is, when did it start to go awry? At what point did he start to, pull people's money in to repay other investors? When did this big Ponzi scheme start?
It's a story of greed. It's a story of deception. It's a story of trust and self-delusion, this Bernard Madoff case. And Aaron Lucchetti from The Wall Street Journal, thanks for filling us in so much.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, a South Asian cantor on being Indian and Jewish.